What's up, guys? Welcome to episode 152 of the PS3 Blogcast. I'm JCM. With us this week is Isley.
Yo.
And Messiah.
Hello.
It's a long delay there on that yo.
He's not paying attention.
Yeah, I am paying attention. I'm only sort of paying attention, though. I'm paying, like, 50% attention.
He's probably playing something right now.
I am. I'm playing Oddworld New and Tasty.
Oh, that's a good game.
I would love it if it weren't for the controls.
You know, I got used to them pretty quick. The one thing that was annoying was that the jump was up for the like the ledge thing, like to grab a ledge. That threw me off in the beginning. And then when I first started looking for the secret areas, all the secret areas on the floors are hatches now. And like when I first, I was like, I can't press down behind this barrel. I was like, why isn't it working? Then I realized you have to open up the hatch. But apparently I only saved, I missed, I think, two Mudokon somehow. Even though I knew where all the secret areas are, I somehow missed two. I was like, God damn it.
And then how did you know where all the secret areas were?
Well, because they changed a couple of the designs of the gulags. They changed them. They're not the same.
I don't know what the gulags are.
Did you ever play Oddworld in PS1?
No.
Okay.
This is a first for me.
Okay, so you've never played Oddworld. Okay, so you have no reference. All right. See, I played Oddworld.
Oddworld
Abe's Exodus. Then I played Oddworld. Oddworld's probably the one game I've played on every platform. I played on PS1, I played it on my PS2, and then I played it on my PS3. And now, thanks to the remake, I played on PS4. Oddworld's a great game. Exodus is awesome. Two-disc game, it was so good. But yeah, they changed some of the level designs in later parts of the game. Other than that, it's pretty much spot-on one-for-one remake. It's weird having a constantly scrolling camera versus the still frames, which was a big part of the strategy in the original Oddworld. Because then, you know, if you can kind of go off frame into the next, get seen, and then get like get the enemy's attention, and then go back into the other frame, and if they shoot, they don't get you because you've already changed frames, but then they'll come and chase you, and you can run and hide and do whatever. Where now it's kind of, you have to find that sweet spot of moving the camera forward to where they can see you, because they won't see you right away on the edge of the screen. So you have to move a little forward so the camera keeps moving. Then they'll see you, and then you have to make sure you run quick enough. But which changed up some of the puzzles, mainly dealing with strictly with the sligs. But any other puzzle with like a paramites or the scrabs or slogs, like it was fine.
I'm like 12 minutes in, so I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's a great game. It's I hope they redo Oddworld Abe's Exodus, because Exodus was hilarious.
You know, it's fun so far. The only thing that throws me off is I guess I was expecting faster controls.
Like, I guess quicker response to what you're doing, your inputs?
It's just the controls are very, it's a good way to put this, kind of sluggish controls.
I suppose, because you can be extremely precise with your actions in that game. Which is part of the strategy as well, especially in the original, and in the remake you can still accomplish it once I got used to the fact that the jump changed for specifically for going through doorways. But you can time your stuff just right. You just have to get used to it. I don't remember being sluggish. But
no, I don't doubt you can time things just right. Like, for example, when you jump, you're either jumping forward or you're jumping straight up. Mm-hmm. And you can't, like, you basically have to pause and stop to jump straight up. You can't, like, be slightly moving forward and then the jump arc is different. It's just, I'm used to older games.
Yeah, because you can't jump while walking. Well, you can do, like, a hop.
Right.
But
well, that's essentially what I mean. Is like, you can't jump while walking. It's either a full run or, like, a straight-up jump. And I really wish I could use the D-pad. For controls.
Yeah, I kind of, that was one thing I wish they had the option, but I, being, since I played the original 50 times, but I quickly, like, after the first, once I got out of Rupture Farms, it was pretty much, alright, I'm fine with this, but there were a couple moments later on in some puzzles where not having the D-pad made it a little odd.
Yeah, I'm just used to playing 2D side-scrollers with a D-pad, especially if it's like a puzzle sort of game. Like, yeah, there are some where I'll play with an analog stick, but usually I won't play with the stick unless it's like something that's a really smooth game.
One thing I love that they changed in this game is that you have precision when you can aim while throwing stuff. In the original, if you wanted to throw something like a grenade or a rock, you hold the throw button. If you're just standing there throwing, you'll throw it straight in front of them, and it'll arch down after a certain distance. If you want to throw it down, like say you're standing on the edge of a ledge and you want to throw it down to a area below you, you have to press the down button. But he throws only down in one particular like way, so you have to stand right on the edge. You can't stand like a step back. If you want to throw something up in the air, you have to hold up, but it's only one arch. And if you want to throw up something that's above you by a good few feet, you hold back, and then he'll throw it kind of more up in the air and straight. So there was no, you really had to kind of like, if you're trying to blow up something that's off on the other side of the screen, specifically one of the anti-chant machines, you have to kind of like find that sweet spot of where to stand, and then throw your grenade and make sure your grenade blows up in the air by the thing or whatever. Or if you're trying to blow up mines in the ground with rocks or bones, you have to make sure that you find that sweet spot. But now they add the precision with the right analog stick, which I thought was, I think it's right analog, it might be left analog, where you can actually aim now like 360. I think that's fantastic. It made some of the puzzles like a lot quicker to go through. So you didn't have to do that trial and error of, oh, I wasted the three rocks, but I still have some mines I have to blow up, so I have to go back to the sack to get more rocks or something. But I really like, there's the one thing they did is they have one section of the game that in this version, if you make a mistake, you can get stuck. You can't progress. I mean, you can, but you have like a 0.0001% chance of doing it. But you didn't have that issue in the other one, which is weird. So I had to restart the section in order to make sure I had enough grenades, because I needed three, and I think I wasted one. So it's like, oh, if you don't have the extra grenade, well, you're not going to be able to make it.
I hate that.
So do I need to be concerned about progressing in this game?
No, it's just one spot in a gulag. I can tell you exactly which one it was. I think it was Gulag 3. I can like show you a screenshot of the area so you know like, okay, when I see this area. But like I said, because you can restart this section, it's fine. It just annoyed me. If it didn't have scrolling frames, you could. But because there's no freeze frame, you can't do it. It's impossible. But yeah, it was really kind of annoying. I was like, damn it. But anyway, other than that, everything else is pretty spot on. All the secret locations are in the same spot. And like I said, apparently I missed two, because they changed some of the gulag stuff. I was like, these aren't how the gulags go. They kind of reuse some sections a little differently than I expected. Like there's one part in the game where you come back to a place, and when you come back, in the original, you originally only were in one specific spot, but now they let you backtrack the entire thing. And I was like, what?
One thing I haven't been able to figure out is what the hell's the difference between easy and hard in this game?
Health points. Hard is the original. If you got shot once in hard mode, you died. If you got hit by a bat, you died. That's the way to play. Now, like you see those, if you chant and you see those birds around you, that's your life bar. So now on easy, like you can take like more machine gun shots, but if you want to play the authentic way, is to play it on hard to where one hit from anything kills you, which is the way to play.
I was wondering about that. Who knows? We'll see. It's an interesting game.
Yeah, it's I'll be interested to see what you think of it, considering you never played it back in the 90s. So,
like I said, the only thing that bothers me so far, and I know this is kind of a dumb complaint, is that it seems slower paced, which is a weird complaint for like a puzzle game.
Oh, just wait till you get to Scribania and Paramania. Oh man, you have lots of fun there. Lots of you have to be constantly moving puzzles, and then you have to know what's coming up and jump and grab ledges. My favorite are the trial runs of the Scribania Temple and Paramania Temple. It's like once you finish them, you have to go through this gauntlet essentially, and you can go in the background of the scenes and kind of see what's coming up, like where all the ledges are, and like where you have to jump, where you have to dodge. But then when you do it, it's you just start and you have to go and just run. I think in this game, they're a little more forgiving, because if you die, it kind of checkpoints you at a semi-safe spot, not the beginning, like in the original. I kind of wish they did it in the original, like just put you back in the beginning area, but I do love those gauntlet sections. They're fantastic. But yeah, I'll be interested to hear what you think of the game once you finish it, because I love that game, man. Oddworld is a great series. So fun. But there's a lot of hidden areas that are like, what I liked about the second one is that there's 300 Mudokons that you can save instead of 99. So they put these these empty bottle piles in on the screen to let you know that somewhere in the screen is a hidden area to find some Mudokons. And sometimes you had to jump off a ledge.
Is that what that means?
Well, there are no bottles in the first one. Not the bottles I'm talking about. There might be bottles lying around, but usually you can... In the first one, they kind of... There's more audible cues. Like, you can hear them. Like, you'll be in a particular area, and you can kind of hear them. Also, they show them on the map in this one now. They didn't show you on the map on the other one. Like, if you look on the maps, you can see, like, there's little bright little, like, dashes in the map on the floor that'll show you, okay, there's a hatch that leads to a secret area. Like, there's one right when the game starts, there's a secret area, and there's one in the next frame, and there's one in the frame when you jump across the two platforms to get past the mines, and you come across the first sleeping Slig and everything. If you go back to the mines, there's a secret area down there.
How many secret areas are there?
There's a lot. There are a ton of them. Some of them are like, there'll be like a barrel in front of you, and your character walks behind the barrel. There's a hatch beneath that one. But like I said, they tell you where they are in the map in this game. So if you come across the map terminal, are there map terminals, or can you just open the map in this game? I forget. In the first one, there's map terminals. But if you find one and you open up the map, you can see them. Like, the floor will have, it'll have a floor plan of the entire layout of the level. And on the floor line, if you look, some of them will have these bright dashes that indicates secret spots. They won't indicate spots that you have to... I'm trying to think. That's only Rupture Farms. It'll show
you. I don't think I've gotten far enough to experience any of this yet.
But like I said, there's one right in the first spot. Like, right when the game starts, there's one right there. A hatch on the floor, which traditionally would have been behind a hidden barrel, but in the next screen there's one, so you missed one, right? Like, you'll see it when you get to the end of Rupture Farms. It'll tell you how many Mudokons you have left that are still in Rupture Farms that you didn't save and that will die if you leave, so because you have to save a certain amount in order to get the good ending. I think it's 50.
Well, I was looking at the trophies, and one of the trophies is to save all of them in like 3 hours. So I'm curious how possible that is.
Apparently, it's pretty possible. I thought that was. I was like, man, that's super fast. Like, I guess if you played the game on easy, that way you didn't have to worry about damage. I suppose you could do it. I mean, I feel like when I play that game, it takes longer. At least especially the original. Like, it takes longer than 3 hours.
But, well, that's kind of why I was saying it seems to be a disconnect. Like, they want you to play the game quickly. But the game's not really, like, it's polished, but it has a different control scheme. So when I say it's not fluid, I don't mean that it is, like, a negative thing. Like, it's obviously a design option, a design choice here. But it still makes it difficult, especially if you have to do it in 3 hours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought about trying to plan it, but I didn't want to. I was trying to go for the 99 Mudokons, just in general. But, like I said, apparently I missed just a couple. And I'm like, God damn it. But like I said, they changed one section, like we said, when you come back to an area you've previously been, they open up the entirety of the level, and then you can go all the way back, and it's like, God damn it. So now I was like, went all the way back, I rechecked more of the secret spots, but I don't know, I was like, this is not what it was in the original, which totally threw me off. I mean, I liked having something new, but I was like, man, this is messing me up.
Yeah, so do the secret areas count as part of the 300 little dudes?
There's only 300 in the second one. There's only 99 in the first one, so you only have to worry about 99. But yes, they count. If you're in Rupture Farms, any of the secret spot in Rupture Farms counts towards that area.
99.
Yeah, not in Rupture Farms, but in the game in general.
And well, isn't New and Tasty a combination of the first two games?
Nope. It's just Oddworld Abe's Odyssey.
Okay, well, it definitely says there's 299.
Oh, wait, yeah, they're... Oh, right, there's 99 in Rupture Farms. Okay, never mind. They added a bunch of them. That's what it was. But it's not a combo. It's not... Oddworld Noon Tasty is Oddworld Abe's Odyssey. I forgot. That's why. Let me open up my thing. God, where's my controller? I think it might show me how many things. I thought that was... Man, you're talking. I was like... I kept thinking it's like 300 sounds right. It's like, no, because it was 99 because I keep thinking about the original. It's 99 in Rupture Farms. It's 300 overall. But you do come back to Rupture Farms, and I don't think all 99 are in. It's weird because they didn't update like more secret areas. They just added more Mudokons to those areas, which sounds easy, but it's like when you have to deal with like running them under meat grinders at the right time or telling them to walk past a laser field or a electricity field without them getting zapped, it's like, You have more room for error when you increase the amount of Mudokons.
Oh, I know. It's already driving me crazy.
Like, hello, follow me. And he's like, he gets killed. The best was...
I can already tell I'm really going to enjoy the trophy where I have to kill 99 of them.
Yeah, oh, killing them was my favorite thing. Because when you kill Mudokons in the first... I mean, I think it does it in this one as well. I said I haven't played in a while, and I didn't actively try to kill them on my playthrough. But like, I used to line them up under... like a user-operated meat grinder, and I'd get like every Mudokon I could in the one level, and then I'd all make them stop and sit underneath it, and then I'd just get up in level and I'd pull it, and like the frame rate would drop to like 3 because there'd be so many flying body parts coming at the screen and bouncing off the screen. It was like too much stuff going on for the game to handle. I was like, oh, good times. But the best about the second one is they added a mechanic where there was emotions to the Mudokons. This is why you should, if you can find it, it's probably like $5. I'd say play it on your PS3. But they added the thing where the Mudokons can be angry, sad, high on laughing gas, and what was the other one? It was angry, sad, well, sad, depressed. It was angry, depressed, and on laughing gas. And then the angry guys wouldn't follow you. If you try to be like, hey, follow me, and they'd be like, no. And then they'd also, if they were standing near a lever, they would constantly pull the lever, which usually triggered something in the level that you had to get past. So in order to get them unangry, you had to apologize to them. So you go, sorry. And then they'd be like, okay, and they're good to go. If they're sad, it's because they probably got beat by some slicks. So you got to apologize to them as well, and they feel happy. Or if they witness someone die, they get sad. And then if they witness too many people die, they get suicidal and they start hitting themselves in the head to kill themselves.
Oh my god.
And then you have to quickly, if they go suicidal, oh, the best is there's this one part in the game where you have to open a door and there's like 8 of them in the foreground. You're in the background. And when you open the door, it triggers 2 water pipes on either end of the line of Mudokons, and which makes those 2 guys angry. And when they're angry, they slap the guy next to them. Then that guy gets angry. And then it's 8 Mudokons all mad, slapping each other. And then eventually one of them will die if you don't save them in time. And then they get sad and depressed, kill themselves. So you have to get up there and apologize. Be like, you have to say, Alia. And you're like, stop it. And then like they quit and you say, sorry. But and then the best is there was blind Mudokons. And the blind Mudokons won't stop. Like typically when you tell someone to walk in the first and second game, they walk to the ledge and then they stop until you tell them to follow you again, then they walk off the ledge. But the blind guys, if you tell them to walk, they just, if you're on the right or left of them, they walk whatever direction you say, and they just keep walking. So they'll walk into a wall, hit the wall, stop, and get a little annoyed. Or if there's a ledge, they'll walk right off the ledge. You gotta be careful. But dealing with the blind Mudokons was fantastic. But yeah, and then the laughing gas guys, oh my god. Those guys, like, you walk through an area, you have, like, 5 of them behind you. If you tiptoe, they tiptoe. So if you have to tiptoe past the sleeping slig, they'll tiptoe as well, so you won't wake him up and he won't shoot him. But then you go in an area, you hit a switch, and all of a sudden the whole room fills with laughing gas. They all go fucking bananas, and they're just running back and forth, jumping, laughing their fucking asses off. And then you go into the next frame, and in order to get them, you have to get them out of the gas first, and then to make them calm down, you have to slap them. And you're like, and then they finally calm down. But like, they just go, they just start running. It's like, you guys are so annoying right now because you're making too much goddamn noise. But they added a mechanic in the second one for puzzles where you can tell Mudokons to work. And then so if you had a puzzle, like say there was like six valves you had to open up in order to progress, you have to save the six guys, bring them with you, or set, let's say seven valves, so you're the seventh guy. Walk past all the valves, they each stop in front of one, and then you tell them all to work at this, you know, at once, and then you work as well, and you get the all the valves open. But I loved the added mechanics they did in the second one. Like, the second one's so good. Like, the first one was great, but they improve, because you can also possess more creatures in the second one. But it's so good. Oh, man, Oddworld. Now I'm just thinking about the game. I want to plug in my PS3 just to play Apes Exodus. Maybe I should find my Vita and just play it on there. But there's a lot of great puzzles in the second one. Anyways, that was a lot about Oddworld. Whew, I like that franchise.
Went off on a tangent there.
Yeah, I blame Izzy. <Isley. laughs> All right, well, let's jump into new releases after we are, what, 22 minutes into this already? Yeah. So out this week was Helldivers, Resident Evil Revelations Episode 2. That's Revelations 2, Episode 2. White Knight, Zombie Army Trilogy, Shiflings, Oli Oli 2. PS3 got Crimson Land, Helldivers, and Resident Evil Revelations 2. Vita got Helldivers, and Mulana X, Oli Oli 2, and Orishika, Tainted Bloodlines. PlayStation Plus, Counter Spry is free. Crimes and Punishment Sherlock Holmes is free on PS3. Draw Slasher, discounted for Vita. Fluster Cluck, discount on PS4. Helldivers is discount on all three. Lego Batman 3 has got a discount. Lego Marvel Superheroes, The Hobbit, Oddworld, Abe's Odyssey, No Tasty is free. That's why Izzy's playing it. Papo Yo is free on PS3. Valiant Hearts, The Great War is free on PS4, which I should pick up because I didn't pick it up before. DLC, Alien Isolation gets the trigger. Don't know what that is. Battlefield Hardline gets the premium because that comes out soon. Blue State the Game Arcade Mode is free. Rabbids Invasion, Lords of Fallen gets DLC. Rocksmith 2014 gets DLC. And then other things. And then discounts on everything Farm Frenzy for the PSP. A couple Lego games got some discounts, and not much. A bunch of other games that Ooh, Stealth Inc., Clone of the Dark is discounted. But let's go ahead and jump into the news. Mad Max gets a release date. It's going to come out on September 1st in North America and September 4th in UK. The PS3 and Xbox 360 version of the game were canceled, or at least development has ceased on them, which is interesting to do. And it's like, I kind of like hearing that people are doing this. I mean, when Dying Light did that, when they said, oh, we canceled the old gen versions because they just couldn't pull off what they wanted to do. Like, well, at least you're, you know, honest about it and don't release the shitty version on an older console. But we'll see how that game turns out. Let's see, what else? The PlayStation Plus March games, of course, we already went over a couple of them, was Papa Yo on PS3, Sherlock Holmes, Crimes and Punishment, Vita gets Oli Oli 2, and then PS4, of course, gets Valiant Hearts and Oddworld New and Tasty. Let's see. Project Morpheus at GDC, they announced that they will be releasing the item to customer or consumers in the first half of 2016, according to Shuhei Yoshida. And they're on the new prototype that will be closer to the final version of the product. This new prototype they have has an OLED display running at 1920x1080, which removes motion blur, and all pictures now have RGB subpixels. They also show the new design has more lights. Instead of having the main light bar all the way around, they broke the lights down into specific little little lights for better tracking. I know a lot of people that tried it at GDC are loving it. Like, everybody that tried VR at GDC is loving all the demos. Like, they say, you know, a lot of the VR stuff, they'll show you, like, the monitor so you can see what someone's looking at. But everybody that uses VR says the same thing. It's like, you look at the monitor, it's like, oh, that's cool. You know, you can look at this thing or whatever, do whatever. But when you actually use it, it's so much more. So.
Well, and that's one of the things that I think is going to be interesting when they try to market it.
Mm-hmm.
You can't show a commercial for a VR game effectively.
Yeah, it's like mm-hmm. when they advertise Blu-rays on DVDs. You can't do that. That's not how this works. You can't put that quality on there and have it projected the same, you know, image quality. It's not. That's not how that works. But
right.
they'll have
so,
to.
So I'm kind of curious how they're going to do it, because unless you have a V-Ray, or not a V-Ray.
V-Ray.
Unless I combined VR and Blu-ray. Unless you have a VR set already, you're not going to know what it's like. So I have no idea how they're going to market it, aside from just going like, this is the coolest technology, you have to buy it. Which, of course, is what they say about everything.
Well, they can show a commercial of someone wearing it, doing something, and then show the screen of what the game is. But they're going to have to put them in, they're going to have to put kiosks in all the stores. In Best Buy, they'll have to be one in GameStop. They do that thing that Nintendo does outside of at Disneyland, where they had the Wii U set up for everybody to try. They can do that, like have, you know, just put the VR kiosk everywhere and have a couple of them so people can try them out. That's what they're going to have to do. I mean, you can push it with commercials, but until you actually, you know, use it. But we'll see. Obviously, if there's, they want to go for the gamers first. So all the gamers, all the hardcore gamers who are Sony fans know about this project and probably either A, have been to an open convention somewhere and tried it, or are really curious to try it at a store. So, you know, you got them. As far as the general populace, I'm, like I said, they'll just have to run the regular commercials and then keep them up at Best Buy or something. Which is like, I think they did that with Move when they were doing Move and everything, but that's what they'll have to do. It's just let people try it.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see, what else we got here?
Either way, I'm excited about it. Looks really cool.
Yeah, the price point and the game's gone. The John Carmack was talking about, he has a first-person horror, obviously has to be first-person, but he has a horror VR game that they're working on. It sounds pretty interesting. Let's see here. Sony announced apparently that PlayStation 4s have sold over 20.2 million units worldwide as of March 1st, which is a lot of units. And then, let's see. Okay, now on to a bunch of Metal Gear news. Speaking of September 1st with Mad Max, Metal Gear Solid 5 got a release date of September 1st. On all the consoles, and then September 15th on PC, on Steam, which is, I'm really looking forward to it. Now, I'm like, damn, I want September to get here. I want to play Metal Gear. It'll be interesting what other games get released in September or around that date, and if Mad Max will, if they'll move up or down, or what they're going to do, if anybody wants to release on the same date as Metal Gear. Because you figure, Assassin's Creed will probably launch in October, like they've been doing recently. They used to be November, then they're like, oh, let's go to late October. And then September will probably be, I mean, who knows what's in September. But
my birthday.
You're like, my birthday's in September? Yeah, but you have to move, you're going to have to move your you better move your birthday, because Metal Gear comes out, so you can't compete with that.
Yeah, but it comes out on PC. How many people are really going to be buying it on PC as opposed to console?
Probably, well, it could be a good amount considering it, you know, they released...
It comes out on PC on my birthday, so...
Well, you're going to have to change your birthday. Steam can't deal with that. They're like, it's like, sorry, we can't
sell
this to
you. Steam will just have to give me Metal Gear for my birthday.
That's right. Metal Gear. And then there's a lot of talk with... all these articles are broken up, but they're all Metal Gear. Kojima was saying in an interview with IGN how Snake won't really speak much in Metal Gear Solid 5. Which I think is a bad headline to put up. But the reason he talks about it is because it's an open world game. You know? So, which, in the overall, like, if I spend 50 hours playing this game and I'm doing a lot of stuff in the open world, I don't expect Snake to be Nathan Drake, where Nathan Drake's constantly talking. So I feel like if he only talks in cutscenes and, you know, in any exposition moments, it won't be while I'm out and about sneaking around kidnapping sheep and trucks, you know what I mean? So I understand the fact that he won't talk a lot because it's not
kidnapping sheep.
Yeah, you have
is that what you plan on doing in this game?
Well, you got to take him back to your mother base so you can get some food going, man. and I'm going to invade your mother base, and I'm taking all your damn sheep.
Yeah, okay, you
stay
you
away
that.
From my pink mother base.
Oh, my mother base. I can't wait to invade mother base. This is going to be so awesome. That's such a cool feature. Your base is being invaded.
No, my but, base.
Boss, we got people invading mother base. But yeah, so it makes sense that obviously in an open world game, he's not going to talk a whole lot. I mean, it's not like outside of... I mean, obviously in Codex, he's not really talking back a whole lot, like when you call people, versus like the first couple of Metal Gears where like you maybe had... So, I mean, unless you're talking to Mei Ling, who just talks forever, and whenever you save the game. But it's not like Snake and any of the other games really talked a whole lot in the open. I mean, Metal Gear Solid 3 was pretty open with their environments. Like, it wasn't an open world, but the environments themselves were really open. And he didn't talk in between all the things, unless someone, you know, hit him up on the codec and was like, Snake, let me tell you about this history of something. But also, I think it's so weird whenever they refer to when it's Big Boss... a big boss game, and they refer to him as Snake. It's always so weird to me.
It confuses the crap out of anybody who doesn't know what's going on.
I know. It's me. Like, yeah. It's like, I know he's Big Boss. Just call him Big Boss. Stop calling him Snake. But
that game seems so convoluted with its story. I don't even know what to make of it. Like, I've always wanted to get into it, but that's one of those games that's really hard to get into if you never played them when they came out, because you just have no idea what the fuck is going on. There's like six people that are all clones of each other, and one of them's old and has a bionic arm, and one dude has a jaw that's like a metal jaw. I don't know.
Right. I'd say definitely play the first one. The first one's the least crazy of them. And there's the first one was like that game for me that people talk about, you know, what game, you know, transcended your idea of what video games could be. And like, a lot of people say Metal Gear, for me, that's the game as well. Like, I played a lot of video games, and I remember Metal Gear was... I saw the case, and it wasn't mine. It was my older brother's friend's for some reason. He had it with him. And we didn't even, like, live together. He just had it. And I, like, looked at the case, and it was like, Metal Gear. And to me, it sounded like, oh, a game with some mechs, which didn't interest me at all. And this is, you know, 98. And
that's what it sounded like to me, too. And I think I would have enjoyed it if it was a game with mechs like that.
And then I looked on the back cover, and I was like, well, there's not really a mixture. And it's like, you know what, let's try this game. And I played it, and I was like, holy shit. Like, this game is unlike anything I played. And I was like, this is awesome. It's so cinematic, and it uses the actual, like, stock footage of stuff and everything when it's telling its story. I was like, this game is so interesting. I love the first game. Yeah, but I'd say definitely play the first one, especially since you can just play it on your Vita or PS3. Don't play the... Twin Snakes, though. They over-exaggerate someone's cutscenes, and they changed a couple of voice actors and lines of dialogue. So, don't do that. Just play the original Metal Gear.
But, just stick to the original one.
I can, like, tell you the entire story of Metal Gear. I even read the books, or quote-unquote books, in Metal Gear 2 that you can read. The Secret of Shadow Moses, the short one, and then the long one by Nastasha Romanenko. I read her, it was like 380 some pages. I read that thing, but I can like tell you all about it. I think they have an Escape from Mount Stupid for Metal Gear on that GameSpot has, but I think it covers all of up to 4, I believe, but I wouldn't watch that unless you want to ever go back and play the games. But they're really good. But yeah, I'm looking forward to 5. I can't wait to play it. And then back onto this, Kojima also says that Metal Gear 5, The Phantom Pain, will be the last Metal Gear Solid. He does say, you know, for him, it's the final game in the Metal Gear saga. I mean, he said that a lot, but I feel like this could be it. And then if it does go on, it won't be, you know, if Metal Gear goes on, it won't be part of this storyline. Which kind of bugs me, because I was really hoping that they would go up to the point of Metal Gear and then bring back David Hayter to be Snake, and then like maybe either, and then you encounter Big Boss in that game, and then you can have Kiefer Sutherland and David Hayter in the game and be like, oh, there you go. But that'd be great. But yeah, we'll see. Yeah, he says in that sense, this will be the final Metal Gear Solid. Even if the Metal Gear franchise continues, this is the last Metal Gear. This will be the last true one. All right, next bit of news. Bethesda revealed Wolfenstein: The Old Blood, which is a standalone prequel to The New Order. It'll be coming out. It'll be $20 on PC, PS4, and Xbox One. Available May 5th. And it takes place, obviously before, it's back in 1946, and you investigate, it's kind of goes back to its roots. Let's see. Diving back into the world of Wolfenstein has been really fun, according to Jeff Gustafson. We've enjoyed exploring the events leading up to the New Order, and we think fans will really enjoy the story, all the action, and of course, jumping back into combat with new weapons. They showed a bunch of they showed a trailer, and some gameplay at PAX East. I watched the trailer for it, but I'll look forward to this. Let's see here, what else? The Old Blood will take us back to 1946, where the Nazis are on the brink of winning World War II. In the last ditch effort to halt the Nazi war machine, B.J. Blazkowicz has been dispatched on a two-part mission deep within Bavaria. Part one, Rudi Jaeger in the Den of Wolves sees Blazkowicz busting back into the classic Castle Wolfenstein and going head-to-head with a maniacal prison warden in order to discover the coordinates of General Deathhead Compound. Part two, The Dark Secrets of Helga von Schaub, sees Blazkowicz's mission lead him into the city of Wolfsburg, where an obsessed Nazi archaeologist is exhuming mysterious artifacts that threaten to unleash a dark and ancient power. I definitely look forward to playing that. It's kind of interesting that they... I like that people are doing this standalone DLC. I hear, I listen to podcasts, and I guess some people forget, they're like, yeah, I like this. I wish they'd do this more. It's like, well, other people have done it. I mean, they did it with Infamous on...
First Light and...
Festival of Blood.
Yeah,
absolutely. And then Red Dead Redemption, Undead Nightmare did it as well. But yeah, it's like, I like these people that do these little standalone...
I like these standalone DLCs, because if it holds up as a game and they're only charging, 40 or $30 for it or something, it's usually worth it.
Yeah, I like the fact too, it's like, I think it's good for the people that, if they have the disc and they're like, maybe they, people that sell their games back to the store for store credit, it's like, oh, hey, here's this. You don't need the disc, the old disc for the DLC. You can just play it, which I think is fantastic. But especially if I had Infamous 2 on a disc, because I bought all my games on disc for PS3, and it's like, oh, here's this. You can download from the store. You don't need to put in the disc to play it, so I didn't have to go, get it off the shelf and put it in every time I wanted to play that DLC. I just download it and it's good to go. But this comes out, let's see, when's the... Yeah, May 5th, so I'll be looking forward to that. Tropical 5 on PS4 comes out next month. It'll be coming out April 24th in Europe and April 28th in North America. That's weird that those are backwards. Tropico, of course, is the game where you can play as the country's either ruthless dictator or a good leader. It's a pretty popular series on PC. I've never actually played it, but I was curious about the game when Tropico 5 was announced on the consoles. Let's see what else we got. Oh, HBO Go finally came to PS4, but of course it's blocked by Comcast.
Oh my God.
Just like it was on PS3, so they're both still blocked, which is stupid.
It's really dumb, because most people have Comcast and can't use HBO Go. This is why people pirate shows, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People pirate shows because TV providers make it difficult to actually get it legally.
I just borrow login information.
Here's the thing. I have HBO Go.
Uh-huh.
Same reason as you. I borrow login information, but I could still be watching it legally.
Yeah.
The issue is, the way I want to watch it legally is on the TV without plugging in my computer and everything, because I have my console already hooked up.
Yep.
I don't want to have to log in on my computer, plug it in or plug my computer into my TV and then go from there. So the end result is I end up just pirating it and sticking a USB drive in something.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I get it worked out. I mean, who knows what the fuck's going on, but...
Oh, God, it's been a year and a half, though, for PS3, and they never did it.
Oh, I know.
They won't.
It's a money thing.
Let's see. Moving on to the next bit of news. Shuhei Yoshida at GDC was talking to Game Informer, and he was telling them how the PSN is under attack literally every day, and that Sony's always working to combat what's going on. He's like, we're always working against these attacks. Actually, an attack happens every day, literally every day. Some days are bigger and some days are smaller. Some days they devise new means, new ways. It's like cat and mouse. We have a partner company we work with, and we always update the new ways the attackers might deploy. So it's just a constant battle. And I also heard something else. I think it was at GDC, and I forget who said it, but I know that all three companies are apparently working together as far as dealing with, because, you know, Xbox also had issues on Christmas, not nearly as long as PS3 or PSN had, but I know apparently they're all...
Xbox actually had issues after Christmas as well, too.
Yeah, I know, but they resolved theirs faster than Sony had. But I'm just saying that they were also under attack, because I know that apparently all three companies, Nintendo, Sony, and Xbox or Microsoft, are working together to help better. I think it was Phil Spencer that said that from Microsoft, saying that, you know, they work together because he even said himself, he goes, you know, the PSN being down doesn't help him. He said it's bad for gamers, which I like Phil Spencer. He's a cool guy. He's just, you know, he's a gamer. He actually plays stuff. And yeah, he was saying, you know, we're working together to kind of figure out, you know, better ways to help keep systems up and all that. Let's see here. Final Fantasy XIV Heaven's Ward gets release date.
It's
coming out. You mentioned it.
Well, I had to. It's part of the news. It's coming out June 23rd, rather.
And I think you broke Xayah in the process.
Square Enix plans to give players early access expansion on the 19th. It's coming out. It makes me like not want to go for any gear, because I'll just wait till the level 60 cap comes in and there's new gear, which hopefully is better than whatever will currently be out, you know, but probably not. We'll see. Do you know
it's
what the eye level...
essentially how I felt about all of Final Fantasy 14.
Well, yeah, those problems, it always updates, and, oh, there's new stuff here. Gotta get this new stuff. But do you know what the eye level requirement is for turn 10?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. I never did Second Coil, so I don't have it in my duty finder.
So. It's Final Coil. But, yeah, I try to look online, like, I type in, you know, Final Coil turn 1 or turn 10 Coil Bahamut, you know, eye level requirement, and no one lists it. I'm like, are you kidding me? Why does the Google search not work? Like, they tell me, you know, what drops in each of the turns and blah, 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 the strategies for the turns, doesn't tell me the goddamn eye level. I have to, like, go into the game, look at the duty finder, and be like, all right. Stupid. But yeah, there's a lot of I feel like there's a lot of Final Fantasy stuff comes out from PAX. Like, they show a lot of 15. A lot of people are loving 15 too, apparently. Mm-hmm. Like, people that don't necessarily like Final Fantasy or have been burned, like, they're really enjoying it. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it turns out.
15 does look cool. I think they realize this. 15 is like their chance at redeeming themselves.
Yep.
Hopefully. So
we'll see how it goes in the finished product. Last bit of news I have here. This doesn't help at all. No, it was an article that told me, that was like, the article was titled Changes Coming to the PS4 and Xbox One Version of Dark Souls 2, Scholar of the First Sin, like, they changed some areas. And I thought,
it's like no changes.
No, it lists changes, but it's a wiki. It's not an actual article. It's like, it's just a wiki page. Like, here, for example, the following changes will be included, you know, blah, blah. They'll have new enemies, traps, mechanics to locations that did not previously have new content. So, for example, here, Hyde's Tower of Flame. Hyde Knights are now sitting around in almost every area. After defeating the Dragon Rider boss, the Hyde Knights will begin walking around, that's going to be interesting. I kind of like that they were stationary, but only one of three knights must be defeated at the circle to make the lever appear, which is interesting. I wonder which one. It's probably going to be the one with that stupid club. I hated the ones with the clubs. The Dragon Battle boss must be defeated before traveling to the Cathedral of Blue. A new guardian dragon is now protecting the lever leading to the old Dragon Slayer. The connecting tunnel between the Tower of Flame and No Man's Wharf is filled with enemies in a new arrangement. I'm not familiar with that tunnel, so I can't think of it. No Man's Wharf. Low-level enemies have been arranged differently than in previous iterations. To reflect new lighting tech, the area is now extremely dark, and the ambience and visuals will change as the light torches, as you light torches along the way. A new shortcut has been added to this area, you motherfuckers. Here, let's give you a new shortcut now. During the boss battle in this area, the water level now rises, adding difficulty to mobility. Well, that's interesting, even though the boss is super easy. I'm curious what that new shortcut is. The one thing, that was, I killed that merchant there on accident. And he was the one guy I could have sold a bunch of stuff to like, the one guy that would buy, like, one specific thing. I was like, I could have sold to him, but I killed him.
I have to admit, even though I've already played Dark Souls, I think I'm going to buy it for PS4 again. Just because I'm in such, like, I've wanted to play more action games or more action RPGs so badly recently, and I don't really have any that I can actually play.
If they made it to where you can go through the entire thing in co-op and not timed and really difficult to put down soapstones and pick them up, I would consider possibly replaying the whole thing if I could play it all co-op. I think that'd be a lot of fun. But you can't. You can only stay in the area for a little amount of time. You gotta do stupid soapstones and wait for the symbol to appear.
That's aggravating.
Yeah, it's like, because I want to play co-op. It's like, all right. The most annoying thing is when I was in the, what was the level? It was the tower, not Head's Tower, but it was a different tower, and it had that Medusa boss.
Medusa boss?
It wasn't Medusa. She's like a Gorgon.
I don't remember any Medusa bosses in the game.
Yeah, well, she was a Gorgon, pretty much. She was a snake lady, and she had that pit that had the poison, and unless you burned down the windmill, the poison stayed there.
Oh, yeah. And, God, can't remember her name now.
Yeah, but you remember her now.
The one where you get the Jester to fight her, and the Jester basically solos her.
Well, I didn't get the Jester fighters fodder, but, like, I liked going to the area, putting down a soapstone near the entrance, and then making people fought, like, spawning in to see if, because there's that pool of poison right before, you can go up. And I'd say, if that poison is there, then they didn't burn down the windmill. So I'd have them follow me all the way back. Like, I'd motion them to follow me to the windmill, go to the bonfire right near the windmill, light the torch, go up to the windmill, point at where he had to go. And usually there's always a sign on the ground that says, use torch or whatever. And, like, I'd try to tell them, hey, burn the windmill. Get rid of the poison. Makes the fight easier. But then, like, 80% of people would know what was up. And they'd do it. And they'd be, like, super thankful. But then there's that one guy who just doesn't know what the hell's going on, and then just goes into the fight, and then we have to fight this boss with the poison mist everywhere, and then everybody dies, of course, because you have poison. It's like, are you dumb? But I used to love sitting outside certain bosses and just having people stun me and fighting them so I can get a bunch of points or whatever it was that I was going for. I forget. I don't even know what the currency was. But it was good times. Other than that, there's not much else. I mean, wasn't any other huge announcements out of PAX. I know they announced there's a release. They announced the release date for the next episode of Tales from the Borderlands 2. That comes out March 17th. I'm waiting to see for all that to come out before I pick it up. But yeah, so we'll see about that. Other than that, I guess that's basically it for the news.
I mean, they showed some indie games we'd seen before. Which I'm still interested in a few of them, but yeah, they didn't really announce anything new.
Yeah, it was nothing really new. I mean, I know Microsoft apparently showed off some mini games, but I didn't pay attention because it was on their console, so it didn't matter to me. But other than that, I know you're playing New and Tasty because we talked about that. What are you playing, Zaya?
I've just been playing 14 and Zelda, pretty much.
Just 14 and Zelda still?
God, yeah. We need to get you, like, new games. We need to start, like, sending you monthly games or something.
What's that?
I would say go ahead and do that, but I have games on console that I could play, and I'm just, like, I live in the gold saucer still, so.
She's got a problem. She's got to get a gold saucer enemy.
She's got multiple problems that are unfortunately adding up. An addiction to MMO and apparently an addiction to gambling. And it's all coming together in one place.
Yeah, you didn't play 1.0. What's going on? No.
Right?
That's so funny when I saw that tweet.
My job sometimes.
Yeah, but... Yeah, I've just, aside from... I need to get play a little more FF outside of my Monday and Tuesday raid night, just because since we're moving on to turn 10 and then 11 and all that jazz, I probably have to raise up my eye level because I'm only 110. So I need to, like, get up there, actually get some poetics and do all that jazz, but I haven't. Yeah. I need to do the story dungeon, that way I can keep going with the story missions, but who knows? Maybe I'll log in today.
To be fair, like the poetics gear for Dragoon is mostly useless anyway, so you probably just getting gear from Coil or like the newer dungeons.
Well, the thing is, I don't know what the eye level of the coils are. Like, if it's higher than 110, like if it's 115, it's like, well, I don't have 115 gear, so I'm only 110, so I have to raise it somehow. So I figured poetics would be the easiest way. Unless I can get into turn 10, because turn 10 drops, I think, the necklace, the ring, the wrist, and something else that for Dragoon. And then turn 2 or turn 11 drops pants and I think hands. So I have to, and I hear turn 10 is pretty easy actually, compared to turn 9. I mean, turn 9 just had a lot of really annoying, it had a lot of mechanics that were fun to deal with, but there's just some at the end, it just gets super annoying. And then it does that thing where it's like, if you fail, like one thing goes wrong, then you have to redo the entire turn again. Like, if you just continue with that one step, that'd be fine. It kind of reminds me of Twin Tanya, where it's like, getting through the first couple of stuff is easy, but then it's like getting right at the end with the Twisters and the Dread Knight, it's like, ugh. If that's the only problem you have, the area you have trouble with, it's like, I just want to get straight back to that. I don't want to have to deal with the snakes again and go with all the first part, because it's so boring, because it's like the mechanics are super easy. There you go. It's like, it's kind of like how it is with turn 9. It's like, all right, let's deal with the golems, deal with these, and okay, let's get to, okay, here she is, okay, Heaven's Fall is coming, all right, here it goes, okay, kill the dragon, get rid of Garrote, there you go, all right, now we're in where this shit goes down, dive bombs are coming back, okay, but yeah, so I need to get in there and do some more stuff. And then
you do World of Darkness? It drops like 120 gear, I think.
No, World of Darkness drops... I don't think World of Darkness drops 120 gear. I think World of Darkness drops...
I can solve this. Maybe it's 115. It's 120.
It is?
Darkness, the demon gear is by level 120.
World of Darkness gear. I didn't realize it was 120.
Looking at it. Demon Tabard of Aiming, I level 120.
Huh. Interesting. I guess I only did World of Darkness... once, and I don't think I got anything from it, or maybe I did, I don't know.
I don't even know what World of Darkness is. Is it like,
yeah, 120 the new demon, the demon,
it's gear. The end of the Crystal Tower saga.
Okay,
yeah, it is 120, huh? I guess I could do that,
just do that.
Yeah,
because that gear, I think that gear is better for Dragoon than the Poetics gear.
Because
I'm just sitting on Poetics Tomes right now, because I don't have anything I want to get for Bard or Dragoon for it. I'm just sitting on them to get summoner stuff.
Maybe I do have some Dragoon. Maybe I think I might have the Demon Pants. But I don't know. Yeah, the problem with that is like it's, you know, once a week, and then I don't like dealing with all those people. It's like, 'cause there's nothing worse than like one party super sucks. God, Jesus Christ.
It's a lot better now than it was on launch week.
Yeah, I suppose. I did it once, but I'm sure people probably only run it now if it has a light bonus. But
it's pretty smooth now. I mean, very rarely do you ever get, like, a party that's just absolute garbage, but I run it a lot at, like, 1 o'clock in the morning, and that's when the trolls come out, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So you've always got that party of just, like, assholes.
Yeah.
Don't want to do anything right.
Yeah, it's that one item a week thing. Like I said, I get one item, and then I guess we ground out soldiery. Then I can do one of those, one soldiery, one poetics, one of those, one poetics. But
They have the weekly tower climb now too, where you do Labyrinth of the Ancients, Circus Tower, and World of Darkness, and you can get either a carbon coat or a carbon twine to augment the Ironworks gear.
Okay, so that's why people do that. I had that question. It's like, why do this? I was like, what's the purpose? I'm like, okay, that's why.
Well, they made it, you could only get the carbon coat before, which was for the accessories, but they made it in the last update so that you could get the twines, so you can choose between either one.
And do you basically do all of them back to back to back in one queue?
No, you have to queue for them separately. You can do them in any order. You just have to do each of them one time for the week, and then you turn in the quest and you get your item.
Okay. Interesting. Maybe I'll look into that.
So that's helpful, but yeah.
But yeah, because I only want to raise up my eye level if I have to for something that we're doing in-game wise. But like if turn 10 requires more, I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to have to raise my stuff. I want a better weapon is what I want. I have Liberator as well, which is fine. I mean, it's what, one Liberator's 110, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I don't want to do any relic stuff. I don't have time to do all that. And I guess I could get the Shiva weapon because I hear that's pretty good. But I don't. Then I'd have to do Shiva like 4 times, mm-hmm. and then hope she drops the weapon. But
and you have to get the little augment item from her too to make it the diamond weapon or whatever.
Yeah, so that's why I need like 4 of them. So I'd have to run 4 times. But I have to run them with my free company. That way. They would just let me allot it. Like that's the only reason we do it is like, hey, let's get JCM his weapon real quick. All right, let's run this 4 times because I've never done it and they've done
it. You have this crazy grudge with the duty finder. It's pretty funny.
I don't like the duty finder. I used to like.
I live off the duty finder, which is funny to me. You're just like totally against it. I'm sitting in it right now.
When I used to grind soldiery and myth and stuff like that back in the day, when the dungeons were ones that I liked, I didn't mind doing. My daily expert in high and low level roulettes in the duty finder. It wasn't that bad. But then after a while, I was like, I think it's because that's all I played was 14, so I didn't mind. But now I don't play it that much, and I'm like, I don't want to do this. Nope, I don't want to play with strangers. I'm like, I'm not going to do anything.
Are you guys both still on Leviathan, or did Zai leave?
She left a long time ago.
Yeah, before FanFest, because I had some friends that were coming back to play, but they couldn't afford transfers, so I just transferred over here to play with them.
Yeah, I'm still.
Where's over here?
Excalibur.
Ooh.
My original server.
All I heard was that Zaya doesn't like you.
She's like, I gotta get out of here.
My free company on Leviathan was like aggravating the crap out of me sometimes too, so I was like, I'm just gonna go. It's okay. Yeah.
I used to run into Zaya randomly in in one particular zone. I think because we're always doing the beast quests there.
Oh yeah, doing the Almazah dailies. Yeah,
in a little Alamigo. But I'd be like, oh hey, look, it's Zaya, because the name above their head's orange. I can tell. My friends.
I know that person.
Yeah. But yeah, other than that, I needed. Man, I haven't had like any time. Recently I feel like anytime I've had to game, I've just been doing I'm playing some StarCraft, but I started playing Battlefield yesterday with my friend because he picked up Battlefield 4 randomly. I'm like, sweet, now I can start playing Battlefield 4 again. So we played some of that last night, and then if I'm not playing that, it's like if he's on, we'll play Last of Us. And I'm like, I need to play The Order still. I was hoping to have it done so I could talk about it on this podcast, but I just no time to play The Order. And then it's like House of Cards came out, so now it's like I'll watch an episode or two of House of Cards and
Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which you guys won't watch for some reason.
I had no idea what it was until you said something.
It's a new hilarious comedy show.
Okay, I will put it on my list of things I need to watch.
It's worth watching, and every time I watch it, I can't help but think that Kimmy Schmidt is basically you, with how excited she gets about random things.
Yeah. Well, we need a secret word for this week. Let's see. Well, last time it was Gold Saucer. So what should it be this time?
Something that doesn't have to do with my addictions?
You just opened yourself up to that one.
Totally not addicted. Right. I can leave anytime I want.
Denial.
Yeah. Denial, yeah.
Now what I'm curious is, which addiction is stronger? your evident gambling one or your addiction to Final Fantasy?
I don't have a gambling addiction. I'm not gambling anything. I'm racing chocobos. If anything, I have like a horse racing addiction.
That's
if she lived up here in a...
But there's no gambling involved in chocobo racing. You always win. I mean, you always get points. You don't lose anything from it.
Ah, boo. What is this, Little League?
Even yes. If you lose, we'll still get ice cream.
You gotta teach your chocobo.
I have more
lose.
Points than my stupid boyfriend who's playing Triple Triad all the damn time.
My stupid boyfriend.
Who has like 50 cards already. He's addicted.
Yeah. No, he's got a problem.
He does.
So secret word, I guess. We could do... I don't know. I was going to say...
That sound effect you just made.
This, you got to type it out. Okay, it'll be this many letters, this many of these. But...
I think we should just make it gambling and ignore what Zai said about not making fun of her.
I hate you all.
Totally not a gambler. No.
Yeah,
we'll do... Oddworld.
Now it's on you.
We'll do Oddworld. And of course, Oddworld is one word.
Of course.
Of course. Due to Oddworld, new and tasty. Oddworld. Man, now I'm gonna have to play that. I kind of want to go back and play the original. Maybe I'll just play Exus. I gotta unbox my PS3 then.
I have to admit, I absolutely love like the graphics and the design of it.
Yeah, like, the world is great.
Ridiculously depressing and hilarious at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Man, but I love when you get to Paramania. Like, Paramania is so nice because it's very forest. Like especially before you actually get to the temple, that's a great looking area. And so is Scribania. I mean, Scribania is more like rust looking because it's like a desert, kind of like Arizona, I suppose. It's got that red stone to it, but I like those areas a lot. The problem with playing this game, because I played it so many times, when I get to those temples, there's like 8 rooms you have to go in. You have to light a torch in each of the rooms, and that's as you light the torch and you light all 8, you open up the main door, which leads you through the gauntlet area to get through the temple. But there's always certain ones I don't like. I'm like, oh, I hate this one. But I had that a lot in video games. For like, you play a game that you haven't played in a while, and you're like, oh, I'm in the section of the game that's super slow, and I don't like this part of the game.
I remember disliking this area.
Yeah, it's like, I don't like this. Or I've had it like, I'll play a game I haven't played in a decade, and I'll be like, shit. How do I get past this part in the game? And I have someone like, hey, remember in the game, blah, blah, blah. How do you get past that one part? But I haven't done that in a long time. I used to know me. I was like, damn it. I want to play this game, but I totally forget this section of it. But, man, I really hope they do Exodus. That would be fantastic. It's crazy when you look at the release dates, because, like, Oddworld came out in 97 and Exodus came out in 98. It's like, that's so crazy. For back then, because you know development time was so short,
mm-hmm.
And man, Exodus was huge, and it was so the humor in it was hilarious. It was so funny because they had these news terminals for the news station called Magog on the Mog, news you can use, and it would there's these 3 Gluckans, that were the heads. It was a general, the head of the brew factory, and the head of the Boneworks, and they would each be super mad that Abe was going around trying to destroy each facility, and it was just like hearing them on the news. It's so like you can look up the videos for them, just like Magog on the Mog, and there's like a bunch of them, but they're so funny. There's one like it cut the news. It's always a news conference too, like a press conference. So it cuts into one, and like so and so had this to say, and it cuts in, and he's like, "Those freaking slaves. I mean, my fellow employees. We need to watch out for Abe." But it's. It's pretty funny, but man. The weirdest thing about Oddworld is, in Oddworld, Abe's Odyssey, he had 4 fingers, you know, 3 fingers and a thumb, and then in Abe's Exodus, he had 3.
That's the weirdest thing?
It was super weird, because it was like, they show when the game starts, when Abe's Exodus starts, it starts with the cutscene from the good ending of 1.
And out of all the weird things you could have picked... That's the weirdest one.
Yeah, hey, Oddworld's not that weird. No, it was odd design. Like, why did they change it to go from four fingers to three. Like, I thought it was really weird, especially because it's in cutscene. It's like the cutscene, one moment he has four, and then changes to the cutscene for Exodus, and all of a sudden, bam, he has three. And I was like, what? Why'd you do that? But no, Otterworld's, I didn't play any of the other ones. I know I've seen the entirety, an entire playthrough of Munch's Odyssey, and I never played.
Wasn't Stranger there at all. A new one that just came out like a few years ago?
No, it was an HD one for Stranger's Wrath.
It wasn't actually a new one though.
No, yeah, there's only four. Even though it was they only had four games. They had Odyssey, Exodus, Munch's Odyssey, and Stranger's Wrath. I was really hoping they would do some more of it, but yeah, you know, I think it's because when they switched and did Munch's, and then I don't know, maybe going to 3D, they just, you know, maybe people didn't like it as much or didn't sell as many copies. I mean, it was a pretty big change, especially to the formula, but who knows? Because it was going to be the Quantology, the Otterworld Quantology. I think they said they had an idea for one. I was reading a thing with an interview from the guy where they wouldn't mind doing a new game in the series. I don't know who the hero would be, because Abe was in Munch's, but he wasn't. It was kind of like a Metal Gear 2 thing where, well, that wouldn't make any sense to Isley. It's kind of like you play
part of the game. You can't use Metal Gear 2 as your point of reference.
Yeah, you play part of the game as Abe, and the rest of the game you play, like, in the part of the game you play is Munch. And then Stranger's Wrath is, of course, like, entirely different. But I wouldn't mind another, like, Abe-centric game. But that'd be great.
Do they look any different?
What do you mean? Like, what do you mean look different? Between
Abe and Munch, are the sprites the exact same?
No, they're totally different. Munch is like a different creature. He's like a different creature type with a totally different like abilities and stuff. Like, he's not a Mudokon. I forget what he is. Whatever he is, he was a creature that was hunted to extinction for food at Rupture Farms kind of thing. And then he's like the last one and the last of his kind. And that's what you play as him. But yeah, he's not like Abe at all. Yeah. And then Stranger from Stranger's Wrath, he's not like anybody else either. He's a different species altogether. But anyways, I guess that'll wrap it up. Oops, I don't want to open up Final Cut Pro. Get out of there, Force Quit. I guess that'll wrap it up for this episode. So again, secret word is Otterworld, one word. And that'll wrap it up for this week. So thank you all for tuning in. And thank you, Isley, and thank you, Zaya, for joining. Yep. And hopefully archive.org won't be down and let me upload this episode today and not wait till Tuesday. It's so annoying. But we will see you guys next time.
Bye.
Later.